Hello, welcome to Out and Proud. This week, from hookups to slowmance and happy ever afters, we're looking at relationships. Joining me in studio this week is Padraig Wilson McCarthy. We also have psychotherapist, sex and relationship counsellor Paul O'Byrne, and married couple Sheena Cahill and Sarah Elaine McHugh. You're all very welcome to Out and Proud. Great to see you. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
Padraig, let's kick off straight away with the dating. Is it a cliche? Or probably is a cliche to say, is it all about the hookup?
Well, I mean, it certainly can be if you want it to be, especially in this day and age. I think dating apps now, it's become more casual or less formal. And as a result, I suppose, hookup culture is probably more prevalent than it's ever been. And you can actually meet somebody online now and organise a date with them without ever actually having met them in the first place, you know?
But is it an actual date?
That's where the line is kind of blurred, because it's easier to hide behind a screen and say that you're, you know, you've got an intention when it mightn't be what you actually mean. And I think it's harder for the other person to read than whether you want to go on a date or whether you want to go for a hookup.
And does then the app dictate the date? Because there's so many apps, but a lot of them serve different purposes.
Well, I think a lot of the apps, and I only have experience with some of them, right? But I think there are certain apps that are definitely dedicated just solely to hookups, right? And there's other apps then that have developed over time that were essentially for dating and are called dating apps, but I think have got like a bad reputation over time. So like if you look at the types of like Tinder or Plenty of Fish, it's like swipe. I have loads of friends who are married now who met people off the apps, like particularly like straight people. If you want to go on like the likes of Bumble or Hinge, that tends to be where people go for dates. And then obviously for gay men, there's Grindr, which is solely just for, well, it says it's for dating, but we all know that's probably not the case at all. Like,
it certainly is.
No, it's certainly not.
Do you think you can tell the difference between somebody who's just looking for that casual connection or somebody who's a little bit of a more discerning dater and maybe looking for love?
Well, I mean, we should be able to, and you would hope that the person that you're speaking to, you know, through the app is going to be, you know, fully transparent, but I don't think that is always the case. With the likes of Grindr and stuff, you know, you can actually put up what you're looking for. So some people might say, look, I'm only looking for hookups, or I'm looking for networking and dates, or I'm just looking for friendship. And then you can get an idea before you even engage in a conversation with them. Personally, I think being upfront and honest is probably the key, but that's not always the case. It eliminates a lot of wasting of time and stuff. You need to consider, and you need to, you know, read what the person is saying to you. You know, if they're, for example, they're saying, right, let's go for coffee, that's fine. But if they're saying, why don't you come over to my house? That's probably only one thing on their mind.
Yeah. And some of these apps are older as well. Like Grindr is about 15 years old at this stage. The people's feelings, do you think, have they changed over time about these apps?
Well, I personally think that people are getting sick of the apps, actually, you know, and there has been a shift from, like, when they were new, people saw them as this new, like, wonderful thing, you know, that you didn't even have to go out or go to a bar or go anywhere to meet anyone anymore. But actually, I think over time, people have realised it's actually nice to meet someone naturally, because you know off the bat whether you click with them or not, and you're not wasting your time. But the likes of Grindr and stuff, you know, even the founder of Grindr has said that there's flaws in that app now, and over time, like, it's probably becoming obsolete, particularly around, you know, we know that, like, they're very poor for verification, for example. So anyone can go onto these apps now and make a profile and use fake profile pictures. So we've seen MTV's Catfish, we've seen Tinder Swindler. It can be quite dangerous. So like the founder of Grindr actually has come up with a new app called Motto, and there's a couple of differences. Like, you have to have verification, you have to have a profile picture up, it can't just be of your torso or whatever it is, and also you're limited to the amount of people that you can actually match with or speak to as well. So it takes away from the whole swipe, swipe, swipe and get through as many as you can.
So it's nearly forcing you to be discerning.
Exactly.
Yeah. Talk to me about, there's a bit of a swing to a different element, which I've only heard about recently. And it's an interesting concept called slowmance.
Yeah, so this is like a new concept that kind of came through research that was conducted by Hinge, which is one of the apps that I spoke about earlier. Apparently, it's very popular among the LGBTQ community. So basically, it's slowmance, as you say, and it's kind of exactly what it says on the tin. And it's the idea of taking things incredibly slow, particularly at the beginning, in the hope that you get to build up this like trusting relationship and really get to know a person before you get intimate with them, really, right? So it's like, what they recommend is that you don't jump in with any like deep questions at the very beginning. You keep it very light. You keep the talking phase going for much longer. And then when it goes to like dating, you kind of pick like low risk areas. So like you might go for a coffee where you can come, and then if you want to leave 20 minutes later, you can, as opposed to going to the cinema and being stuck next to the person for 2.5 hours. So it's like this idea of just really slowing things down. And then the last step is how you announce that you're in a relationship. So for example, you all know like soft launch and hard launch. So a soft launch is like when, you know, you might post on social media and you might have like a hand, you know, or you, there might be two drinks on the table and everyone goes wild and they're like, oh my God, who you're so... Hard launch then is when it's like full on face pick and like tag them in it. So that's the idea of slowmance, which is interesting actually.
So slowmance to me sounds a bit like courting of old.
Well, that's it, you see. It's almost like full circle in a way. Yeah. Now, I don't know. The gays probably will hate that because we love jumping in. Do you know? But apparently it's becoming more popular. And I can see why it would be useful, because people are allowed to build those trusting relationships and be vulnerable with someone before they're intimate with them, which I think is key here.
And just, I'm interested, is there an equivalent to Grindr for females?
That is a good... I wouldn't know there anything about that.
What are you talking about? We are married.
How would we know anything about those day, apps?
I've never been
day.
More thrilled to be married when that just all sounds exhausting.
No, honestly, it is.
I am exhausted listening to you. I don't think there is.
There used to be gaydar girls. Mm. And there was the same 8 of us from around the country. I am not even joking. Like, it was a desert. So I was like pre-Tinder. So, do you know?
So you've escaped, basically.
So
what you're saying.
Basically escape.
Porrig, put your phone away there for a second.
I'm just wondering who's here.
If the dating goes well, though, we all know that it can lead to something else we discuss more long term. Paula Byrne, you are a sex and relationship therapist who practices queer affirming therapy. I suppose there is a bit of a sort of relationship blueprint of old for the straight community, namely date, marry, kids. But that doesn't necessarily translate for the queer community.
It's a bit of a contradiction, because we have this freedom to have the relationships you want to have, but it's still within the systems that are kind of primarily still heteronormative and the society we live in. And I suppose, especially for this generation, that freedom, it's kind of like it's filled with such uncertainty. What is our blueprint? How do we create our blueprint? And I think a lot of queer kind of relationships at the moment, they take for granted the fact that they are the pioneers of what the future will be. We are creating the blueprint. And I think there's not enough recognition given to that and the importance of that. And it will take probably a long, long time, and we will make mistakes. But heterosexuals are still making mistakes, and they've been doing it for centuries. So, you know, we have to give ourselves that space to kind of really, just like that, create our own blueprint. And that'll happen as a queer collective, as a community, over the next coming generations. And we have to give ourselves space and time to figure that out and cultivate that together and create that.
And when we talk about relationship styles, Paul, examples of what we're talking about might be monogamy, open relationships, or polyamorous relationships. Have you helped people to create boundaries in those situations?
Yeah, in relation to, I suppose, we have monogamy, and then we've consensual non-monogamy, and that would be where polyamory comes in. And then there's, of course, open relationships, open marriages. The most important thing is communication and honesty. You know, that's where it starts. And I suppose the one piece of advice would be, don't jump into anything. Give yourself space to understand what your needs are, what your desires are. Discuss those with your partner or partners. And like that, you're coming up with agreements, you're coming up with rules, you're coming up with boundaries, and you're constantly checking in with that. So I suppose there is a framework in relation to co-creating an open relationship. Nikki D is a very good psychosexual therapist in the UK, and they've come up with this 7-step framework, which is very good, and starts with imagining. So you're imagining what it's going to be like, how it's going to be, how it's going to affect your life and the life of your partner or partners. And yeah, so it's just about like that communication, honesty, checking in, and just, I suppose, giving yourself the space to be yourself within the relationship and not to be constrained to those kind of blueprints of the past.
Let's be honest, there will be people listening who, when they hear the word other than monogamy, anything other than monogamy, they probably think the beginning of the end for a relationship. But in your experience, can opening up that relationship maybe possibly enhance it?
Of course, it depends on the individuals. You know, if people have those needs and those desires and their partner also has those needs and those desires, their relationship, like you say, boundaries can be put in place, rules, agreements. And of course, that can kind of allow a relationship to flourish. But it's not a plaster for a relationship either. It's not something that, like, if there's problems within the primary relationship, they need to be addressed before you even consider opening a relationship or, you know, going down the path of polyamory, because those issues are still going to be there. You can't escape your problems. So it's to address those issues if there are issues in the core relationship and then think about opening it up.
Because I've sometimes heard of people doing it the other way around, where they don't address the problems and then they think opening it up might possibly address whatever problems they're not talking about.
Mm-hmm. And that can lead to a disconnect, a lack of closeness in the primary relationship, kind of just cutting off from each other. There's secrets being kept. People aren't telling people other things. There's a lack of communication. And that can just lead to a breakdown of the primary relationship. So that's why checking in, communication, honesty is just really important. And again, the boundaries and the rules and the agreements. It's no secret there's pushback within society, you know, at the moment in relation to this difference. Because with this difference comes a fear of, well, what's this mean for me? This is forcing me now to look at my relationship. And talking about the apps, and specifically maybe the apps that are designed for the casual kind of hookup situation, it's really important, because I've a lot of clients who are young and they're engaging with these apps, but they're not acknowledging the motivations as to why. We can kind of go into these situations and not get a sense of being fulfilled after them. So it's really important, I think, to just take a moment, look at your motivations as to what do I want here? What are my needs? What are my desires? And if you are engaging in kind of activities that you're not getting that sense of fulfillment, or you're not getting, you know, what you thought you'd get from it, just be curious as to what is it that you're looking for. Is it the casual kind of sex that you're looking for, or is it actually an emotional connection with someone? I think it's really important, especially for the younger generation coming up now, where it's the norm for them. And, you know, we only live one life. So it really, why not examine how we are in that life in relation to others, and to kind of make the most of it for us and for the other people that we share, those kinships in our life that we have, you know? It's all about love at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Speaking of love, loved up before me, Sheena and Sarah Elaine, you're not married a year yet. So technically you're still classed as newlyweds, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, officially, yeah.
If anyone has any kind of gift cards they want to keep sending, the post is still open, for sure.
How did you first meet?
I was involved in the repeal campaign down in Longford. So both of us are from Longford. We did not know each other before we met. We hadn't been kind of around the same school age or anything like that. But
Sheena's nice way of saying it, I'm older.
But I was down involved in the repeal campaign, and I had a little very rickety kind of table outside the post office in Longford town. And I was encouraging kind of volunteers to get involved in the campaign. And Sarah had seen that, you know, we were looking for people to help out. And she'd sent an email to the dedicated Gmail account that I'd set up, and I hadn't replied.
No, she had not.
I had not replied. And in the email she said, look, I heard you're looking for some volunteers. I'm going to come down on Saturday. And sure, no reply from me, unfortunately. So that was the first thing I heard when this woman strode up to my rickety table in the middle of Longford town and kind of said, hello, my name is Sarah. You never replied to my email. And that was our first interaction. But the most important part of this is I looked really refined. I looked really in business. I was wearing...
You were wearing a blazer.
Blazer.
I was like, yeah. All right.
Girls, I was wearing a blazer.
Yeah. I was also wearing a blazer.
Yeah, she too was wearing a blazer.
Doesn't happen that often.
Stereotypes again.
I know.
Yeah. And I was in a bit of a delicate state, shall we say, when I arrived.
Where'd you been
when
the night
I rocked
before?
Down. I was out in the George, of course, and at like 2 o'clock in the morning, I was with one of my best friends, Davey. And Davey had done a lot of campaigning for marriage equality, and it was something I always felt very guilty about not doing anything for. And I was like, I'm going to do something for repeal. This is important, but I'm not going to do it in Dublin, because Dublin's a lock-in. Do you know? I was like, I'm going home to Longford, and Longford's amazing, but you know, my little hometown didn't vote yes for marriage equality, which was, you know, I had feelings. So I was like, for repeal, I'm going down home. So I just drove down, and I was like, look, as Sheena said, strode over and was like, what can I do? So that was how we met.
Yeah.
And that was pretty
and
much
was
it.
There
locked eyes over a rickety table.
Yeah. Over that rickety table, was there an instant attraction, spark, interest, do you reckon?
There was, yeah. There was definitely questions. I mean, I suppose we both laughed because neither of us knew the other one was gay, or we weren't sure. Like, the Blazers apparently didn't give it away.
Has marriage always been in your agenda, or did you always think, yeah, it's something I would love to do in the future?
Not for me. I actually never thought I was going to get married. Like, it just wasn't something that I had a huge... I never felt that go on me. Do you know what I mean?
Had you been against it? Or
no,
were you just...
No, definitely not against it. Absolutely not. Like, and said, I was always sorry I didn't campaign for marriage equality. And that sorry, that lack of campaigning didn't come out of not wanting it or not feeling that as a community we deserved it. I assumed it was going to pass with or without me. I didn't feel any real go on me to go out and campaign. I said, it's something I do feel sorry about now, just to be part of it even. But I had never been hugely pushed on getting married myself, so personally. And I said, it wasn't until I met Sheena where I was like, okay, this is something actually that I would really like to do. And I can see now why people want to do this.
Why?
No, that didn't put a shove on her to actually ask the question. Like, I actually was the one who went down on one knee when we were down in Cork for a weekend away.
That'll Cork will do that to you.
I know. Yeah. Cork does it.
That's it, yeah.
Soft sands, yeah. Down in Clonakilty, yeah, yeah, yeah. when we talked about marriage, and we did, and Paul, you were talking about the importance of communication. It probably comes up a lot quicker, perhaps, for LGBTI couples, because it was forced onto our radar from a campaigning and political perspective. Like, so for so long our lives actually have been intertwined with the political, that like our friends growing up in around 2015, when all of my friends were, you know, obviously beginning their lives in their 20s and having various different relationships, you know, we were out campaigning for the right to get married without, you know, necessarily being in relationships we thought would end in marriage. You know, I was out campaigning for marriage equality with the Union of Students in Ireland. But this was never in the context that I thought myself. I was doing it for myself. I felt like I was doing it for the community or for people around me. And so marriage as a concept, as patriarchal as I think it often is actually, and as an institution, it became such a point at which we had to argue ourselves into a justification for it and the ability and the equality around that.
So now that you're in, and we're using your word now, Sheena, the institution, how is it working, and has it surprised you at all? Anything differently, kind of unexpectedly surprising about it?
Well, it was really important actually for us to get married. And part of that was about sharing our relationship with our friends and family in the way that other friends and family had. That was really important to us. And it's not a surprise, but one of the things I probably have valued most since we've gotten married is and it's not that it had necessarily been wildly different before we got married or signed a green paper, but the way Sarah is part of my family at home, and the way she is seen by my wider family, my aunts and my uncles, the people in my local area when we go home, when we go for dinner in the Rustic Inn down in Aberystwyth or whatever. Like, people treat her as my wife. They ask me how my wife is. And that I don't take that for granted, quite honestly. Mm. I just don't, because, like, there are centuries of homos before us, but none of them in quite such a way may have been as public as we are being allowed to be. And the fact that I'm even having to say the word allow is mad, but that's the reality, that the publicly married people and the publicly together people in whatever form those relationships are making the blueprints for the people behind us. And I don't think that's lost on a lot of us. Maybe what has surprised me, as I say, a little bit, is just how seamless it has been in a community and in a polling booth in my local community that didn't vote for marriage equality in 2015. The reality that we face here is that it's not a given that we are safe. It's not a given that we're accepted. And so the idea that, you know, any of us are kind of out and being able to talk about our relationships in a way that is welcomed in communities right across rural Ireland, and we're seen as the same. I know that so much of queer culture is about being different and celebrating that difference, and it should be. and we should always be questioned on that, and we should question straight relationships as a result, I think, and hold up a mirror to them. But at the same time, it is a thing that we should fight for, that we would be accepted in that way too.
Like, one of the things I was super excited about getting married, which again I never thought I would be like, can't wait to be able to say that's my wife. And like, it feels like, and I'm not saying that marriage is not for everyone,
no,
you know, at all.
You're convincing me.
Me too.
But it's not, and nor should it be. And yeah, exactly as Paul's saying as well about there's different kinds of relationships. But there's a lot of power still in those words. There's a lot of power in the word husband. There's a lot of power in the word wife. Like, I love being like, oh, that's my wife. Yeah, they're like, that sounds very possessive and patriarchal as well. But you know, I'm going home to my wife this evening, and it gives a weight, and it also takes away any kind of it takes away any assumption. Like, I never use the word fiance because it's gender neutral, and people would assume, oh, your future husband.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it like
and
that.
And some people love the fact that it's gender neutral, and loved the fact that it didn't give away. But I really chafed against that, so I never used it. Like, I still said girlfriend nearly up until I said wife.
Still, not a good enough reason to say the word chafe on radio. Honest to God, Sarah. That obviously kills me. I see, this is one of the things, we're so supportive of each other. We back each other up. But like, like all jokes aside, I think that's, we knew by entering into a marriage, we were accepting that it was an institution, a legal institution that had, you know, that had the weight that Sarah was talking about. But I am uncomfortable with it in many ways. The parts of marriage that I went into marriage for was the fact that I wanted to be able to share and have our partnership recognised the way other people in my family are treated when they have, when they're in marriages, and there's a wedding and there's an event to mark that. I'm less comfortable with the idea that, you know, that there's some level of, I suppose, ownership or anything like that in relation to the institution that has existed for centuries. That is less comfortable to me. For example, one of the things we haven't done is change our surnames. And there's been a lot of, like, people, I know that a lot of, I think, family are bemused by that and wonder why we haven't. And one of the reasons for me is because I'm my own person, and so is Sarah, and why we share so much. And I'm never, I won't say that we'll never do it, but it's important for both of us to enter into the partnership equally.
How, looking forward, do you kind of plan or think about protecting or building or strengthening your relationship?
I mean, I suppose we've been together, I mean, we're married less than a year, but we've been together for 6 years now. So I think that what has gotten us to this point, anyone who's been married for 40 years, like 6 years, come back to me. But but I think what's gotten us here and what's gotten us to marriage and being so happy, because we are very happy. We sound so sickening as well. But we support each other.
We're less happy when our periods sing. I'm not even saying that out loud. Lads, the hormones are real when it's two women in a relationship. Like, you'd be shook. You would be shook. But sorry.
But we support each other. Like, but we take the time. And I think that's a big part of it. And that's something we've learned from our own parents and from other relationships that we've seen as well. Do you know, and other examples. Like, I love coming home. I'm like, I'm just hanging out with the person I want to hang out with for the rest of my life. I'm like, that's just really cool.
It's really fun.
And that's, you know.
Do you know, when you were young and you were like, oh, I'd marry my best friend, you know, before you understood the kind of heterosexual stereotypes of who you were supposed to marry at the time. And you'd be like, I'd love to just get married to my best friend because they're the person I want to hang out with. That's what you should be able to do. No, but like, and again, Sarah's right, like, come back to us in 60 years and see how we're getting on with, like, financials. but I think, you know, it's that level of respect between us is really important, and investing the time in getting to know each other's friends and family as well, because I think one of the things that knocks out a lot of relationships is the idea that you're the only two in that relationship, and that's you even talk about polyamory or anything else. There are so many other people connected to that person, including their friends and family, and if you don't spend time getting to know them, then I think you're knocked out from the beginning.
Paul, we mentioned blueprints. I think they have their blueprint well sussed, totally. That's the kind of healthy basis of relationship. Mm-hmm.
Communication, trust and compromise. And unfortunately, I suppose, given queer history and minority stress and being a minority, trust is very difficult for queer individuals because it's hard in the world we grow up in to trust the world. And then we go into a partnership, and trust can be very difficult. It's very hard to hand over your sense of well-being or to compromise any part of that, to give up that safety to another person. So I suppose it's important to recognise that as well. And then just being curious about the other person, appreciating the other person, appreciating the small things.
Even if it's an interest in Real Housewives. Like.
Well, I'd kind of be on your side and say I wouldn't be on the Housewives
pose.
Honest
to God.
Yeah.
So I just go home the odd weekend and watch it with my mother and said it's fine.
I have to say, I would normally say I'm steadfastly single, but you're kind of convincing me that I should look at it differently a little bit. Pádraig's nodding with me as well. Sheena, Sarah, Paul and Pádraig, thank you so much for joining us all at Out and Proud. Next week, we're going to be back at the same time as usual on RT Radio 1 when we will be talking about parenthood. If you've been affected by anything we've been chatting about, you can find helpline information at rte.ie/support. Out and Proud was presented by me, Trevor Keegan. Sound supervision was by Tommy O'Sullivan. Production was by Jani Lanagoin. And the series producer is Jack Murphy. We'll be right back.